Kamenetsky Brothers, Land of Lakers podcast. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky, co-host of the Land of Lakers blog, coming to you on Tuesday, May 21st, the day, Andy, that 11 Rings, Phil Jackson's new book, as the kids would say, drops at bookstores near you.
Or gets sold out of trunks.
Yeah, either way.
That would be great if Phil was just driving around selling books out of his trunk.
Books! Books for sale!
He definitely wouldn't do it like that.
But just get your books here.
Grassroots, like the kids with the mixtapes and such.
That's how you got to do it. Like the guys on stand on Hollywood Boulevard trying to hand me CDs. We'll definitely get into that as we talk on today's show. Also, because it's
how would he sell those books again?
Books, books for sale. Get your books right here. Hardback.
That doesn't even sound like
paperback.
That doesn't even sound
books
like
on tape.
You know what'd be great too is if he was selling books out on the street. If he got people's attention doing that whistle,
walking by, which would really be tough. Like literally in their faces is like, okay, Phil, I see you got your books, man. It's okay. Yet it would still be a bestseller because that man can peddle books.
And whistle.
So we'll talk about that. We'll get into the Phil Jackson book and some of the interesting things that have come out about it. Because it's the responsible thing to do, of course, we will update you on the story of Justin Bieber's monkey. Most of you have been waiting to find out what the fate of that monkey is. We will tell you later in the show.
It's something that we discussed in a previous podcast. Right. Maybe a couple months ago, I'm sure people remember Justin Bieber had some monkey trouble, not to be confused with the Harvey Keitel movie. And we will let people know just how this has reached its conclusion. All I can say is a spoiler alert. Shame on you, Biebs.
Right. So that's coming up. But we're going to start here with the big news of the week. And this is going to last probably until July 1st. Dwight Howard, two articles this week.
Oh, no, past July 1st. He's not going to have a decision that day.
It's true.
Oh, naive Brian, you little dreamer.
I would like to think that we're all going to wake up on July 1st and this will be over. But that's not true. Two stories this week. First from Ken Berger of CBS.com, CBSSports.com, and the other from Dave McMenamin, ESPN LA. The Ken Berger story, the thrust of which was that Dwight is going to explore free agency and that signing with the Lakers is, quote, far from a done deal. More quote from Berger. The team that is said to intrigue him, not Ken Berger, but Dwight, the most is the Houston Rockets. Second story from ESPN LA, Dave McMenamin. Sources say that Dwight had a long talk with Mitch Kupchak at his exit interview, and I can vouch for the fact that we were all waiting in that room for an awfully long time for Dwight to come down about Mike D'Antoni.
A separate exit interview,
right?
Because there's also one that he did with Mitch and Mike.
Right.
This was one where he just said...
He stayed after class.
Mike, can you...
I got some things to say, but it's best you not hear. That he, again...
I don't want you here when I talk about how much I hate you.
Right. He, meaning Dwight, not Ken Berger, felt marginalized... by D'Antoni as a leader.
We have no clue, by the way, from either report where Ken Berger will play next season or which team he's going to join. Ken's sources are tight.
And that D'Antoni only listened to Kobe and Nash. He emphasized that it's not a him or me type situation, but that this is not – it's something that would need to be fixed, kind of need to be addressed as things go along. All right, so that's two big stories, made a lot of news. What's your big takeaway, Andy?
Really, what we talked a little bit about last week, but I think it's sort of gaining steam, that the idea that the Lakers would be such a no-brainer decision for Dwight doesn't exist, and frankly, really shouldn't, when you really start thinking about the particulars for both teams, and I guess other ones, but I don't really, at least for now, consider Dallas or Atlanta real players in this. I mean, Atlanta has to make an awful
right.
lot
if Atlanta
take
can
place.
Clear do that sort of fantasy thing where they clear out everything and then they can get CP3 and Dwight down there, and now you have Horford and CP3 and Howard. I mean, okay, now you're talking
sure.
about a decent team,
but I think the odds of that are low, particularly after the Clippers just fired Vinny Del Negro.
Right.
A decision
Chris Paul's not going anywhere.
Exactly. So I mean, it's both of us have felt like this is really at least seemed like a two-horse race between the Lakers and the Rockets. there are a lot of legitimate reasons that the Rockets would be appealing to Dwight, and real reasons that he might decide to leave.
I gotta
the Lakers.
Be honest with you, Andy. The more I think about this, and I know, you know, this is going to come off, and it will be an unpopular opinion among Lakers fans. The more you think about it, other than the guaranteed money, $30 million, who couldn't use $30 million? Even rich people can use $30 million. I can't come up with a lot of reasons that, you know, that where if you make the two-column checklist and all that of why you would sign with the Lakers if Houston is your other option. You go down the roster, you know, Houston's got, they got Harden, they've got Parsons, they've got Jeremy Lin, who's good. He's not great, but he's a good player. You know, and theoretically they have, you know, all these young players, all these other chips that they could use, and they, you know, good coach and Kevin McHale, good GM and Daryl Morey, well respected. It's a city people seem to like for reasons I don't
it
entirely.
It is a shithole. There is your checklist for LA.
I hate
if
the
nothing
town.
Else. The Lakers have LA going for it, but, because Houston sucks.
And if you add Dwight Howard to that team, even if it's in a sign and trade, and they have to give up some of that stuff, because Houston wouldn't necessarily have to give up a ton if Dwight was willing to come there and play for the 4 years in the smaller contract.
Or the flip side too is the Lakers, unless they're willing to give up Houston, that is, James Harden in the deal, in which case, yes, they will give up their flexibility moving
right.
forward.
Lakers may not want to take anything back.
Right, exactly. So the Rockets really may not have to give up a whole lot if a sign and trade was the way this was facilitated.
Right, and so,
facilitated.
That's such a great word for this kind of thing.
Facilitated.
Like a trade that is made, like when guys will take on a contract so that another team can make this other trade. Like, you know, Minnesota did that a couple years ago where they picked up a player. I think it was actually, that was Beasley. Like, they just took him for free. They facilitated the whole super team.
So
thing.
The facilitator is the third or fourth team involved.
Right. The team that just kind of takes a guy to help somebody out, and they usually get something good for just being a conduit. They're the facilitator.
Okay.
Nice word, Andy. Good work. You cannot make an argument that next year and for, say, a couple of years going forward, that the Rockets aren't much closer, if you add Dwight Howard to that team, to winning a title than the Lakers. You can't make that argument credibly.
Yeah, I mean,
because the Lakers aren't going to win one next year. It's unlikely.
And it's unlikely the Rockets will as well. But at least
if you
know,
add Howard to that core, they become a top four team in the West. Easily.
Probably, but just knowing that it usually takes time, and the Rocket,
But here you're only adding one player. But either way, regardless, they're a whole lot better than the Lakers. I think we can both agree with
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. I agree with that. But what I was going to say is, moving forward, at least you know what you have and what you're trying to grow. The Lakers, you have no idea.
Right. If you're Dwight, you have to, and this is the situation the Lakers are in, and it's not their fault. This is just the, you know, in the way the new CBA works, the way the world works now, you have to start over at some point. And so the Lakers probably not going to win a title next year, and then they have a complete rebuild.
There's no probably. They're
trying
not
to be
going
optimistic.
To.
I'm trying to the Kobe plan, Andy, of bring everybody back, everybody stays healthy, and let's see what happens. God damn it, Andy, they went 28-12. They went 28-12.
Most misleading 28-12 in the history of 28-12 samples.
As I put it in a story that I wrote on the blog, the organization is clinging to that record like a cat to a like a cat on a poster.
The hang in there.
Yeah, I mean they went 28-12, damn it. And, you know, and then they have this total rebuild. And now you're talking, what you're saying is absolutely true. When you start a team basically from scratch, it's very difficult to win a title in that year. So if you're Dwight, you're almost now looking at the third year before you win. And I know LA's got the glamour and the guys on the wall and all the history and this and that, and whatever, but from a competitive standpoint, if basketball is purely your reason for picking your team, where am I going to win fastest? The answer is Houston.
Plus,
you have
to choose between
Houston and LA.
By that third year, Dwight's going to want to leave Houston anyway. So you know. He wants this done in 3 years
or
less.
He'll decide he doesn't really know if he wants to be there.
Yeah, well, he's definitely not going to be sure about Kevin McHale by then. I guarantee you that.
And then you add to it the D'Antoni stuff. And you say, okay, well, I'm not going to say it's him or me, because if that gets out, basically my career is torched.
Except among Laker fans who would say you are a hero. They would declare Dwight Howard dead.
Well, we had this little mini debate before because you always wonder where the sourcing is on a story like this. And, you know, the Lakers, you could say, might leak a story like this because it sets the table for Howard looking kind of petulant and making demands and this and that and whatever. Except the only person that is theoretically be more unpopular than Dwight through this process over the next 6 weeks, and Dwight's only going to get more unpopular as this goes along, is D'Antoni.
I mean,
if Dwight got D'Antoni fired, he'd be a hero,
I'll say
like
this,
you said.
If the Lakers are the ones leaking this, they screwed it up. What they should have said was, Dwight said, I'm not waiting a year. It's me or Kobe. Amnesty him. I mean, seriously, that's how you do it. If you really want to set up...
They're going, what?
If you want to set up Dwight to be the fall guy, that's how you're doing it. Setting it up, if the Lakers are the ones leaking this, that he might be pushing D'Antoni out the door, that'll make him a local hero.
Right, and then the next summer, you know who's selling books out of his trunk? Dwight Howard. Books for sale. Didn't try to get Kobe amnestied. Anyway, that's a callback joke. That's what they call that in business.
You sound like a bookseller from 1789.
I believe that is how they sold. I have a book called Caps for Sale that I read to my son, and that's the voice that we use. Caps for sale, 50 cents a cap. Anyway, so you add the D'Antoni thing where, you know, there's a relationship that needs to be repaired. And granted, Dwight's not the only guy on that roster who had problems with D'Antoni. To some degree, I don't think this is that big a story.
By the way, not the only player on the roster who had a separate meeting with Mitch.
Sure. And you add to it that you don't know when the team is going to be great. You don't know how long Kobe's going to be around. If you're Dwight, that matters.
Can you imagine if Devin requested a separate meeting? All right, Mitch. Now that Mike's out of the room, let's talk turkey.
We gotta talk.
Between the two of us, let's talk about how we want to blow Mike out of the franchise.
Honestly, what do you think Devin Ebanks' exit interview consisted of? Was it him sitting down and like just pointed to the exit?
I mean, I think it was mostly him trying to open the locked door.
They didn't even say hello. That we're gonna
hello?
Need. We're gonna need your.
Hello?
Key, we're gonna need your key card.
Devin here. I'm scheduled for 11:30. Hello.
Hello. We're gonna need your key card, sir.
All right. Now that Mike's out of the room, let's talk
Mitch,
about
brass tacks time here.
Let's talk about how we build around me.
And it gets to the larger question of whether or not LA is this, there's still this concept that nobody turns down the Lakers. Nobody turns down LA. Oh, the endorsements are all here. If you know, Dwight wants to be in entertainment. He wants to make movies. You can't do that anywhere else unless you're in Oklahoma City where they filmed Thunderstruck with Kevin Durant.
Or the fact that Dwight was part of two movies, The Three Stooges and Just Right with Common and Queen Latifah. As a member of the Magic,
thus far
he hasn't made any movies as a Laker.
He's not shooting a movie in the middle of the year anyway when he'd be theoretically playing for the Lakers.
Plus, all they do now is shoot stuff out of L.A. because it's too expensive. If he really wants to be involved in the movies, he should join the Canadian Basketball League. That's where they shoot everything now. He will dominate that league.
It's a disappointing thing to hear, but, you know, and I don't mean this to say that I think, like, the Lakers as an organization are headed for the tank, you know,
have no mystique.
Right. They'll have, you know, there will be advantages to playing with the Lakers. A lot of people will want to play with the Lakers, but certain things are now kind of pulled out of their hands. And quite frankly, if every fan out there questions Jim Buss and whether or not this franchise is in good hands and this and that, whatever, you can't say, I don't think that guy is doing a good job. He needs to hand the keys to Jeannie, bring Phil in and whatever. And in the same breath, say Dwight should just sign here because he just should. You can't do those two things at the same time.
Yeah.
Those two things are not compatible.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, is that I think is worth considering is that if, say, Dwight is really on the fence, and I think it's safe to say he is at the moment.
What time is it when Dwight sits on the fence?
Any time of day?
That's exactly right. All the time.
Well, I mean, you were going to say.
I just invented a joke.
Well, I mean, you were going to
say. I'm going to tweet that
out. Hey. We
just
invented
a joke. That's true.
Calm down there, Carlos Mencia. We invented a joke.
Hashtag joke stealer.
He has a reputation for
that's
it.
Right.
But I was going to say that if, say, Dwight really is on the fence about this and really isn't sure that the Lakers are for him, or that he likes the direction things are going, doesn't really like D'Antoni, doesn't really know how much the history of this organization actually appeals to him, you know, in terms of that's something he has to be a part of, because it's something people bring up all the time. You know, who wouldn't want to join this illustrious history? And some people do, some people don't. But say all of those things he's not sure about, but the tiebreaker for Dwight is, I don't want to lose my opportunity at commercials or movies. If I'm the Lakers at that point, I don't want him.
Go.
I don't want him. I mean, really, because people keep putting that out there. The two things
Man,
they keep...
I won't get my shoe contract.
Right. You're going to get
my shoe
one.
Contract is going to be so much bigger if I play in L.A.
Well, I mean, it's not like when he was in the, it's not like no, when but, he was in Orlando you couldn't
about,
turn on.
What you're talking about, all those ancillary things, let's say you can make more money with endorsements, you can make more money with movies, you can make, but everything on the basketball side is right. Something that is less appealing to you, but you're staying so your shoe contract can be bigger?
You don't want that guy.
You're right.
You really don't want him.
Turning now to the book.
You mean the book that's for sale?
Yes. Live, we have correspondents on the corner of Hollywood and Vine, where Phil Jackson is currently selling his book. Let's check in with them right now. Books for sale. Get your books right here. Books. We're back. Yeah, the stuff that's been getting a lot of attention this week are obviously the MJ Kobe comparisons. That's where Phil kind of a lot of people talk about, and Phil gets into more detail. I think it seems like more detail about the two of them relative to each other than he had certainly with the Lakers or maybe in earlier books. Says that Jordan was the better leader, the better defender, and all that kind of stuff. And you get the impression sort of the overall better player. Nothing that people didn't really already think or that wasn't said and all that. It was very complimentary about the way Kobe's grown into a leadership role and all these other things. What I found interesting about it, first of all, and I know you have something that is kind of links both books together that we'll get to in a second, Andy. But Kobe's response over Twitter, because that's where Kobe responds now, quote, "The comparisons are hashtag apples to oranges," which I believe was a Prince song. The tweet said, "Wonder what the perception would be if M, meaning Jordan, played Wit Shaq instead. Hashtag different roles, hashtag different career paths. Kobe loves hashtags. And what struck me about this was two things. First of all, Kobe has tried for a long time to kind of end these comparisons, deflect it, and say, he's Michael, I'm Kobe, we have different careers and all these other things. And that's basically
and
what he's
doing
here.
And we, as a media and fan base, have been very accommodating. We've really gotten in Kobe's corner and said, you know what, let's let this die.
He's right, guys. Let's leave
this
alone.
They are different people.
Totally
let's stop
different.
Comparing
let's
them.
Let's never do it again. And he Kobe's pointing out something that's absolutely right. Jordan never had a guy like Shaq. When Jordan showed up in Chicago, he was the man. He was, you know, it took him a little while to win, but nobody, he was the guy with that franchise. Whereas Kobe shared the limelight, he shared a different system where that was catered around and so on and so on. It is a little bit apples to oranges. And Kobe did have to wait before he was, you know, the unquestioned leader of the team. But there's still a little bit of that. I read it at least, and you can tell me, Andy, if you disagree, a little bit of that, but if things were the same, let's say I came into the league and I was expected to do what Jordan did, and I took over a team like Jordan did, I could have done that too. I could have been that guy too. I just got a little bit of that in that tweet from Kobe, and maybe I'm kind of projecting some Kobe in there, but I got a little bit of that. It's deflecting, but it's also, don't short sell my skill set and my talent and what I could have been as a leader had things been different.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. You could be right, because I think Kobe absolutely...
He did say he was going to write his own book. You know what the cool thing about the Kobe book is? He's going to sell copies out of the back of his helicopter.
How's he going to do it?
He's going to throw them out of the helicopter and yell, books! Books for sale! And just assume people will throw up the
money. Or that he didn't kill anybody.
Right. But anyway.
You got to do those paperback.
The helicopter was really the thrust of the joke.
The paperback, though, you have to do it that way. You do it hardback, you could end up in a lot of trouble.
You just throw out leaflets for people to buy the download, I think is really the best. It's the safest way to handle that problem.
Looking, though, at Kobe's response, you could be right about that, because I think Kobe does believe that he is as talented as Michael Jordan. Whether you could say he had as great a career, that's tough. I mean, Kobe didn't
Kobe has more. Or at the very least, closer than people give him credit.
Exactly.
For.
But I do think that, if nothing else, I'm willing to give Kobe a bit of a benefit of the doubt that he's saying, look, if you want to say Jordan was a better defender than me, fine. If you want to say that Jordan had a better career than me, fine. If you want to say that Jordan was better than me, okay. I think Kobe by now knows he can't win this argument.
I agree with that.
And that it's not really worth trying. However, for certain stuff like leadership or points scored or role on a team, you better damn well give me the credit of history. And knowing how my career started out versus the way Michael mm-hmm. started out. And I'm going to at least stick up for myself that way, in that our career started out very differently. And there were advantages too, by the way. Kobe was able to win quicker than Michael. He was in a better situation as far
right, coming
as
coming into the league at 17. He didn't right. have to be, you know, he didn't have to be the face of a franchise.
Right.
He was sort of the face of the franchise, but he didn't have to act that way and,
right,
and
exactly.
lead. Got players 10, 15 years older than him
right.
in that way.
He also didn't, you know, he didn't pick up, I think, some of the bad habits that, you know, Michael didn't necessarily pick up, but certainly other players put in that position of having to carry a franchise right away. But I do think Kobe wants people to, if nothing else, acknowledge the history, and I don't blame him.
Yeah, I didn't mean what I said as a criticism.
No, I know
of Kobe
you didn't.
Necessarily. I just think it's sort of two things at once. You know, I wonder what the perception would be if Michael played with Shaq instead. Again, hashtag different roles, different career paths. But the bottom line is he has tried for a while to, as politely as possible, avoid the comparisons entirely. But I think the new tack is yes, but it's just different.
Yeah.
We're just different.
You know what? It's funny though, because I mean, you know, Brian, because I've written about this a lot, fewer things bore me than comparisons between players, and in particular Kobe and blank. I'm over it. I think it's rote knee-jerk nonsense at this point. You know, whether you think Kobe was better or Michael was better, I don't really care at this point. I find it fascinating that, and frustrating really, that Kobe has never really been allowed his own career. You know, it's always through the prism of Michael Jordan or Magic or Jerry West. And the guy has had such an unusual, unique career that, you know, seems to go down as just a comparison point to somebody else. And I find that frustrating. And because of the way people always pencil in, or I should say box in Kobe like that, it leads to the stuff in both the last season and then 11 rings that I think were much more interesting to get totally overlooked. Like, for example, looking at 11 rings, and this hasn't gotten much attention, Jackson reveals that the sexual, you know, assault, the rape trial, the charges against Kobe in 2003.
You're referring to Colorado.
Colorado, 2003-2004. clouded, according to this report, his outlook on the Lakers star. The situation, quote, cracked open an open wound because Jackson's daughter, Brooke, was sexually assaulted while she was in college by an athlete. Quote, the Kobe incident triggered all of my unprocessed anger and tainted my perception of him. It distorted my view of Kobe throughout the 2003-2004 season. No matter what I did to extinguish it, the anger kept smoldering in the background.
Right, and this links to something that in the last
book. And this was something in the last season that I remember, I read this when the book came out. I bought it about a week or so afterwards, and it blew my mind that nobody in the media was talking about this at all. They were spending so much time focused on, Phil said Kobe's uncoachable. You know, is he uncoachable? Oh my God, he's putting him on blast, and the Lakers are moving forward with this guy who's uncoachable. Like, all this stuff that we knew anyway. They had a rift. In the meantime, though, to me, the most explosive and wow thing contained in the book is the following from Phil. I was at a motel in Williston, North Dakota, when the call came from Mitch. You're not going to believe this, he said, telling me about Kobe and the rape allegations in Colorado. Was I surprised? Yes, but not entirely. Kobe can be consumed with surprising anger, which is displayed towards me and towards his teammates. Yet despite our recurring conflicts during our 4 years together, I was genuinely concerned for him, concerned with how this young man could, in the soul-consuming NBA world, become a mature adult.
Right. Basically, wow, I'm a little surprised that this, but like, I mean, normally when you have people, like, you know, they say, God, I just can't imagine him doing
not
that.
Not in a million years could I picture Kobe doing that. It seems completely out of character.
Phil said, well, I could kind of see that.
I could picture it. Yeah. And later on, he goes on to say, knowing Kobe, I recognized how easily the whole situation might escalate. He rebels against authority. With the new powerful authority figures in his life, the police, the prosecutors, etc., I was quite certain he would look for a way to rebel more than ever, doing and saying things that would not be in his interest. The fact that this alleged incident took place in Colorado heightened my level of concern. Here was the one state in the union which the word no definitely means no. Again, that's expressing some belief that maybe Kobe could be involved.
And I will say, Kobe did rebel against authority that year by really kicking ass playing basketball.
You know,
that was for Lakers fans, it was a fortunate way for him to rebel.
As I approached Flathead Lake, these thoughts drifted back and forth, thoughts with no answers, just thoughts. I tried not to judge, only to take notice, one mountain at a time. I told myself, that's explosive. I mean, that is absolutely explosive. Phil saying in the back of his mind, essentially, he could believe Kobe was guilty
of
this.
And what you get in this new passage is an explanation of that, which basically amounts to, that probably wasn't fair.
Yeah, which he had said before. Phil had admitted that one of the reasons he wanted to come back in for the 2005-2006 season was he felt he had done Kobe wrong and that the book was unfair to Kobe and painted him in a light that I think he wanted to help try to fix. But to really get behind, you know, and not all of it, Kobe was often difficult coach and created real frustrations. But to admit the fact that, you know what, I saw this guy as a potential rapist, and that made it difficult for me to coach him and to find common ground with him, that's mind-blowing, yeah, and that nobody seems interested in it.
Yeah, it just gets to what people latch onto when they talk about books, when they read books and things like that. And you know, the MJ Kobe stuff is always going to be the kind of thing that makes a headline, but it's not always the most interesting thing when you get access to somebody like Phil Jackson and what's going on inside his mind and his perception, at least, of coaching somebody like Kobe.
Yeah, so it's absolutely amazing to me.
In other news, Andy, we mentioned this at the beginning of the show, but for people who listen regularly, about 6 weeks ago, we brought you the story, the compelling, the gritty story, the tragic story of Mally the Capuchin Monkey, given to Justin Bieber by a friend for his birthday.
And we admitted at the time, by the way, because we want to make sure that people understand by the time this conversation is over, that we are willing to be fair to Justin Bieber. We both said that was a bad gift to be giving to a guy going, especially a guy going out of the country.
Right, because they get flushed down the toilet, and then all of a sudden they come back up, and they destroy the city.
Or in the case of Justin Bieber's monkey, they get confiscated because you don't have the proper paperwork
at German
on tour.
Customs. And Mally the Capuchin has apparently been there since. Nobody's come to claim her. She's just been hanging out. And now, and this was a story dated on Friday, Justin Bieber had until that day to get the proper documentation in to get Mally back. Quote from Thomas Meister, German custom official. That is
and
a very
And he sure
German.
Sounds one, by the way.
If no further documents arrive, then the seizure order comes into effect and the animal becomes the property of the German state.
And as far as we know, that's exactly what happened. Mally has now been absorbed by the German state, which would have sounded worse 50 or 60 years ago.
But it still sounds pretty ominous.
It's very intimidating.
Especially when you picture the accent.
Right. Mally, you are one of us now. You are now going to be part of the German state. So anyway, this just goes to show. And you know, somebody from Justin Bieber's team said that, you know, we're looking into the idea of placing Mally at a zoo in Germany. Well, you've had 6 weeks.
You've had an awful
long
time.
You've had 6 weeks and you've done nothing.
All you need to do is call up a German zoo and just drop the name Justin Bieber. Right. And whoever you need to talk to will hang up on whoever they were talking with and they will get on a phone with
Excuse me, hippo man. Justin Bieber is on the phone. I must talk to him. Meanwhile, Mally, because he's been ignored by, he's grown up fatherless, and in a cold, regimented German society, has started smoking, running with the wrong crowd, engaging in sex probably earlier than she should. Just saying.
Not always with monkeys.
Right. Mally needs to learn, you know, boundaries at this point. And really, it's because she's got daddy issues.
Here's the kicker, though. Just when you thought that the damage was just being done to Mally, they may go full circle in Germany and they're going to come after Justin Bieber, because in the meantime, Bieber, German custom officials say, owe them thousands of dollars for food and housing and vet costs that went towards the monkey. According to Munich animal shelter Karl-Heinz Joachim, you can bet we are going to ask for that money back.
Well, look, Andy, the as the old German expression goes, I think we've all heard it at one point or another, housing monkeys isn't free. And it's an expression that is particularly applicable in this situation, because that's exactly what we've been doing. They got a bill here.
You know what I think?
The Germans have been propping up the European economy for a while now. They can't support Greece and Italy and, you know, Ireland and
Maui.
This Capuchin monkey. No. That's just too much. That's the tipping point.
What they should do, I think, is
the Irish economy, I believe, is recovering a little bit. Sorry, Ireland, if I lumped you in there.
I think that they should train this monkey to go after Bieber and collect. Because the two options that I can think of, and I think these are the only two ways you can handle this, collection agency or trained monkey. I think those are the only two ways that you can collect this money from Justin Bieber. Collection agency, trained assassin monkey.
I think the more practical of those two is the assassin monkey, and I don't think there's any question about that. I picture a very sort of Bourne Identity kind of thing. Maybe, but you can't lose the memory, because
absolutely
you got to be
not
able to remember Bieber. But in every other way,
you want this monkey holding a grudge.
A monkey scorned. And that actually might be the name of the movie.
You know what? Good for Mally, because Bieber's a punk. He is a punk.
So boo to you, Justin Bieber. And Andy, speaking of other things that make you go boo.
This actually doesn't make me go boo, but Vin Diesel may end up on the same enemies list as Justin Bieber among women because of some comments recently made to Men's Fitness in conjunction to promotion for the movie Fast and Furious 6, which is coming out this weekend. Vin Diesel thinks that it is harder for men than women in Hollywood because, in the mind of Vin Diesel, they get scrutinized more for their physiques than women. Quote Vin Diesel, "Hollywood is more concerned about male actors being in shape than female actors," he went on later to say, "being a physical presence will rule you out of a lot of roles. I couldn't have done Ferris Bueller's Day Off with that physical presence."
Right, because you're a terrible actor. It will rule you out of, and you were very, it will rule you, Vin Diesel, out of most of those roles because you're just a tremendously bad actor.
Having said all that scorn towards Vin Diesel, I will see the shit out of Fast and Furious 6.
Yeah, it's your thing. You love them Fast and Furious movies.
I love this franchise, and I cannot, what's inexplicable to me is I can't even explain why I like them. I mean, like,
which is why it's inexplicable.
When you take a look at all the things that would make you like a movie, you know, especially a franchise, the cast, it's all made up of a bunch of actors that I either don't like, Vin Diesel, Paul Walker, don't care about, The Rock, Michelle Rodriguez. I'm not quite even sure who Jordana Brewster is outside of these movies.
Good looking.
She's good looking, but she's not so much better looking than anyone else they could have put in.
This is LA.
So the cast doesn't attract me. I like car chases. Not that into cars, and these movies have become less and less about the cars anyway as they've gone on. Like, you see in the trailer now, they're jumping off jets and doing, they've become straight up action movies as opposed to car chase movies. The plots are completely incomprehensible. I've watched Fast and the Furious, the first one, probably like 15 times. I can't even begin to tell you what it's about. I watched like the last 30 or so minutes, and this is where I began thinking about this, of Fast and Furious, the fourth.
Mm-hmm.
Still don't quite understand what happened.
Well, it's like Mission Impossible, I guess. I've seen the first one, and I saw it kind of around when it came out. So I really can't participate in your love for Fast and Furious because I don't even know the plot. I don't even remember the plot of the first one. There's just a lot of driving, and
it
was
fast. It's
about
a guy who lives life a quarter mile at a time.
Right. And beyond that, I just don't even remember. So
they're not even craptastic. They're not even craptastic.
The first one, I think, was designed to be kind of craptastic. But, I mean, was the fifth one craptastic?
No, they get serious.
I'm going to leave that up to you. I don't know.
It's much more serious now. They're starting to become, they're trying to gain weight that you don't normally associate with a craptastic movie. But, like, what do you consider the most wonderfully craptastic movie out there?
I mean, the most, I think, certainly in your hall of fame of craptastic movies, craptacular if you prefer, Deep Blue Sea.
Oh, yeah.
Phenomenally craptastic movie. Disposable characters, awesome sharks, great Sam Jackson performance, great Sam Jackson death. The death sequence for Sam Jackson in that movie is among the best you'll find in any movie anywhere. Didn't see it coming.
Oh, yeah.
And that to me is a great example of a truly craptacular movie.
And you can explain exactly why you love it. For me, the king of all craptastic, craptacular movies is Roadhouse. You know,
sure.
It's got these awesome, unintentionally funny performances, ludicrous plot, these memorable lines that are just so awful. They're wonderful. I used to fuck guys like you in prison, things like that. The Fast and Furious movies have none of that. I mean, they're really, or, you know, of like The Skulls or The Last Boy Scout or Showgirls or...
Well, any movie Last Boy Scout, any movie where somebody shoots a football from the crowd, shoots a football.
Oh, from a moving horse. if memory serves, that was when he shot it from a horse.
Right. That impressive stationary, even more so... Otherwise,
it's just amazing to me that I'm not just looking forward to Fast and Furious 6. I'm looking forward to July 2014 when Fast and Furious 7 comes out. And I don't even understand why I like these movies.
Well, love is a many splendored thing.
As Woody Allen said, the heart wants what it wants.
That's exactly right. All right. So that's something to look forward to this weekend. You might see Andy at a movie theater. Follow us at Cam Brothers. You can follow us on Facebook as well. Cam and Etsky Brothers is our page. Updates on the blog and pithy commentary and other things like that. Andy, anything else?
Nope.
All right. See everybody next time.
See ya.